Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Payne and Pendergast with you. You're listening to KILT, KILT HD2 on Odyssey Station. Let's do the eight. At eight, the Ocho. Here we go.
One.
Astros lose last night 6-1 to the Atlanta Braves. It was a close game throughout. It was really 2-1 Braves for most of the night. And then things unraveled in the ninth inning on Josh Hader. We'll get to Hader in just a second. But Spencer Arrighetti, I think, is a positive story from this game. He took the loss. He pitched four innings. He gave up two runs. So if it were almost any other starter on this team, he'd be like, eh. I mean, we wouldn't be saying the same thing about Christian Javier or Framber Valdez or Justin Verlander, but this is a guy making his second start who wasn't expected to be in the big leagues this early, who's coming off of a start, more importantly, where he gave up seven runs in the third inning and he got chased from the game. There were times in this game, particularly in the second inning, where it could have unraveled badly on Spencer Arrighetti, and he was able to wiggle out of it. Got a lot of two-strike counts on guys, but that pitch count got way up, Seth, in the second inning. He threw 39 pitches in the second inning. So you knew after two innings, four was probably the most they were going to get out of him. But I would say solid. I don't know if we're going to see Arrighetti again here in the near future because Verlander's coming back, but a real step in the right direction last night.
Verlander's coming back, and for those of you who haven't kept a close eye on the schedule, they've got a bunch of off days coming up, so it's not like there's really no way to have a six-man rotation right now. Yeah. They would have to be making a decision on, you know what, we like Arrighetti and trust him a lot more than Hunter Brown at this moment.
Or France.
Or J.P. France, yeah. Which isn't that absurd,
no.
Obviously.
No.
Arrighetti, I think, honestly, for a guy who really hasn't pitched much above double-A still, really showed a lot of composure in his ability to come back from that 39-pitch second inning.
Yes.
Where I assumed that was pretty much going to be it for him. Sometime around after the error from Peña to Abreu, I thought, well, it's curtains for this kid.
Yeah, just, I did too, man.
Don't be cruel. But he came back and he was just fine. Sounded calm, cool, and collected afterwards. So, yeah, there's something to him.
The other story from this game is Josh Hader came in with the Astros down 2-1. He came in the ninth to try to keep things close, and it didn't work. He walked a guy, gave up four hits, ultimately charged with four earned runs in a third of an inning. He didn't even finish the game. Brandon Bielak had to come in and clean things up the last two-thirds of an inning. Here was Joe Espada last night on explaining why he brought in Josh Hader down 2-1.
He's been, you know, my freshest arm, you know, from my guys in the bullpen right now. I'm thinking about the next two games before the off day. And, you know, he's the guy that usually comes in and shut the door down in the ninth.
So I
asked that question because Hader had pitched the night before.
Yeah, I didn't have a huge issue with it at the time. I mean, yeah. I admitted earlier I was kind of dozing off at the time. It was getting late. But in retrospect, when I heard that, like, woke up and saw Josh Hader sitting there pitching the ninth, I was like, okay, I get the decision to bring him in, but he really did not do very well. I guess the Atlanta broadcast team, Seth, from some of the tweets that I saw, were destroying Joe Espada. for bringing Josh Hader in. Yeah, they were killing him. They were calling it malpractice, bringing Josh Hader into that game. Yeah, yeah. Did you feel like it was malpractice by Joe Espada?
On what basis was it malpractice?
I guess maybe because they were trailing, not leading. As you point out, he pitched the day before.
Yeah.
And he only pitched the day before, but he pitched to one batter. Like, he had to come in because...
Right, it wasn't... yeah.
He had like four pitches.
Just the fact that, oh, you're only supposed to bring your closer in if you've got a lead? Is it that kind of thing?
I think there is
never
going to
win a World Series with that kind of bat. Ah, crap.
I think people do. I think people do have that thought process, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you have your closer there for, it's not just for leads, preserving leads in the ninth inning. You've got him for high leverage situations, and that's where Hader,
he's trying to keep him. You're trying to keep you in the game.
Yeah. I'm perfectly fine with that.
Two.
All right, Texans are back in the building. This is the quote from D'Amico Ryans that's been getting a lot of run today. Heard it on the show before ours nationally, and I've been seeing a lot of people picking it up because the Texans are a team of note in the league right now. D'Amico Ryans asked, hey, this year you are the hunted. Last year you were the hunter. How's that going to go for you?
I appreciate the question, but we're always hunting. That doesn't change for us. We're always hunting. Expectations on the outside, whatever that may be, it really doesn't change who we are, right? It doesn't. The expectations from the outside don't permeate inside our building, and now we have to change what we're doing just because of outside expectations. It really doesn't matter. My message, our focus as a team is it's always been consistent, the same as it was last year, is, man, you show up and we continue to get better every single day. You're the best at your position, you're the best for our team, then that's what win games, right? For us, when everybody is really striving, putting the work in, right, to be better. And that's what it's all about. We don't care about expectations. Talk doesn't win games. We have to go out and play good football when that time comes.
Yeah, I think I think going from hunter to hunted, if I hear that and I'm a head coach and I'm like, and I just got destroyed in the divisional round of the playoffs, your first thought is like, well, if I were to listen to a lot of the outside stuff, I would say, well, we really haven't accomplished anything, not nearly close to what we're trying. So, no, we don't spend a lot of time thinking about the fact that now we're the hunted, or we're the hunted as opposed to the hunters, because we are very much still the hunters. It's not, and even after we win a championship, we'll still be the hunters. So.
There's so many things that we on the outside think about and obsess over. And I'm separating myself from you on this, Seth, because you're a former player and you've got a much better perspective on things like what D'Amico is saying right there. You've been in a locker room for 10 years. There's so many things that the non-players like us focus on that we think the players focus on. My most recent thing with this, and I told you about this, was when I did the event with CJ a few weeks ago, and we're sitting there in the green room and we're chit-chatting, and I brought up something about the schedule. I brought up, think you guys are going to play the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day? And he was just like clueless about it. You know, like he's not looking at the schedule like I'm looking at the schedule.
Yeah.
Similarly, like D'Amico doesn't think, like we're all on the outside, like we got to come up with narratives. They've got a target on their back now. Ooh, a target on their back.
Yeah,
ooh, they're
being
hunted. That's not coming up in the building, is it? Like, is it
No. It's like, no, you're worried about week one. You've got your goals and everything. But as far as, I don't know about like Super Bowl odds or anything like that.
Right.
I would say it's less than 5%. Less than 5% of a locker room would typically know like who is the favorite, or well, other than obviously the Chiefs or what have you. But
sure.
Like where you are in the Super Bowl odds or things like that.
Yep.
You hear things. When players say they ignore the outside noise, like obviously these days it's almost impossible to completely ignore it because your stupid friends and family always are sending it to you.
right. It's harder.
But it's not like they're monitoring it. There are a lot of guys, when they say they ignore the outside noise, I don't think they're trying to claim complete and total ignorance, but they do definitely not monitor it the way that actual sports fans do.
Yep.
Three.
WNBA draft was last night. This was the first WNBA draft that ever showed up on my radar. It was last night. Because Caitlin Clark was drafted number one by Indiana, and a graphic popped up that showed her what her rookie contract looks like in the WNBA. It's much different than a rookie contract in the NBA. She makes in, for this season, probably what LeBron James makes for about 3 minutes worth of play. $76,000, $78,000, $85,000, and then her fourth-year option, $97,000 for Caitlin Clark. I'm anxious to see what her effect is, Seth, on the WNBA, and if it's similar to what it was on college basketball in terms of like viewership and attention to the game and things like that. Because if it is, then all the people tweeting about how underpaid she was last night, will end up being right. Like, I saw the tweets about these dollar numbers last night. I'm like, well, let's wait and see what effect she has on business. That league is not a successful league business-wise
right now. It's augmented somewhat by the NBA.
By the NBA, yeah.
I think the NIL thing is the whole. Like, I guess the WNBA NIL money is probably going to be bigger for her than maybe any other WNBA player. Yeah. So that's the endorsement. Now that she's a professional, it's endorsements.
Yeah.
She's going to get good endorsements. I do wonder, has there been any kind of a cold envelope theory with the WNBA draft lottery this year? Because Indiana they finished third to last. So it's not like they had astronomical odds to win it or anything. But how convenient that Indiana did win the lottery and get to pick Caitlin Clark.
Because it's so
overall.
Close to Iowa, you're saying, like geographically?
Yeah, I feel like it's just to go to a Midwestern spot.
That would be something to fix the, because you can probably bet on it somewhere. That would be, like, nowadays you can probably bet on who wins the, now if you're betting on who wins the WNBA lottery, like, there's certain things I'll be like, hey, stop calling people degenerates, man, they're just having fun. If you're betting on who's going to win the WNBA lottery, that probably does cross the line of I need to have a talk with you, maybe.
I feel like there's inefficiencies in that market.
Maybe
so it might make sense.
Maybe
Four.
Scottie Scheffler, fraud. Scottie Scheffler, who reportedly said he'd cut off his round, mid-round, if his wife went into labor. And then, you know, immediately had to scurry home to Dallas because of his pregnant wife.
You're saying, oh, yeah, he would leave. Yeah, he would leave.
Leave in the middle of the Masters if his wife went into labor. Yeah, which I don't believe.
I thought you said cut off his round. I thought immediately, ew. Yeah,
I know, as soon as I said cut off his, I know, I thought the same thing. I was hoping we'd just sail past it.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
I couldn't. I had an image of him cutting off his round.
That's another word for it. He was spotted at a Dallas tavern wearing the green jacket once he got home back to Dallas. So apparently he checked on his wife, made sure she wasn't in labor. I don't know.
Honestly, Inwood
Tavern.
This stuff's so annoying. His wife is weeks away from labor. I don't know. I haven't seen a specific date, but they made such a big deal about how amazing it was that he would leave even if he was right on the brink of winning the match. His wife is weeks away. This was not going to be some likely scenario or anything like this. So, yeah, he got home, he kissed her, and then he went out.
And that's acceptable?
She didn't come out with him because she's tired.
That's acceptable? Okay.
I would say that it's acceptable, except that he made such a big show of just how noble and committed a future father he was going to be.
I need this to come down.
I hope his kid hates him. Hope he hates him.
I need this pregnancy or this birth to come down in the middle of a major. I need him to be put to the test. Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
I don't know what the next major is. I don't follow it that close. But whatever the next one is, that's when I need the baby to be born. Put this man to the test.
Five.
All right, Rashee Rice. The hits just keep on coming. We know that since his six-car pileup that he and his Lamborghini and a friend driving his Corvette were a part of a couple of weeks ago, we know that after they walked away from the crash, since then, we've got reports that they found weed in one of the cars in the Lamborghini that Rice was driving. They discovered that Rice was driving 119 miles an hour just seconds before the crash occurred. Now, Rashee Rice is facing litigation, a $1 million lawsuit. He and his former SMU teammate, Teddy Knox, are facing a $1 million lawsuit for injuries that occurred during the six-car crash. Two plaintiffs who allegedly suffered trauma to the brain, lacerations, multiple contusions, disfigurement, internal bleeding,
crap,
and other internal and external injuries that may only be fully revealed over the course of medical treatment, end quote. Far cry from the statement that the Chiefs put out saying they were glad nobody was hurt in the crash.
Remember that? Not to mention, or Rashee Rice's attorney, who is besides himself with rage, this Dallas attorney, that people are focusing on the incident itself instead of the fact that Rashee Rice is cooperating with authorities.
The nerve. Like,
it's a story that he's cooperating with authorities because the authorities had to find him because he left the scene of the accident. Sometimes your lawyers just got to shut up.
Yes.
Like sometimes you just got to tell your lawyer, will you please shut
you
the hell up?
You don't have to up for me that badly, okay? You don't have to stick up for me that hard.
Six.
ESPN is going to make a 30 for 30 about the life and times of the late Stuart Scott.
Oh.
A SportsCenter. I would say a SportsCenter innovator. Like, he's one of the definitely Mount Rushmore Sports Center guys. Definitely somebody who's like shtick and lingo cut through on Sports Center.
It was maybe like part of the last of an era back when the Sports Center desks were the anchors were celebrities unto themselves.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely. And Stuart Scott had a big following. I can't believe it's been 9 years since he passed away, Stuart Scott.
Feels like longer just because I think he had the diagnosis for a few years, I think, right?
Yeah.
So it was a pretty long saga.
He did. So 30 for 30, if you're a fan of Stuart Scott, ESPN has you covered. 30 for 30 coming out in the months to come.
Seven.
I have a question for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Why are you flying your flag, or why did you fly your flag half-staff for O.J. Simpson last week? What in the bleeping world is that?
The Buffalo Bills didn't do that.
Yeah.
The Buffalo Bills barely said a word about it. The Pro Football Hall of Fame, which goes out of its way to just, they always point to the bylaws. Well, the bylaws say that we don't worry at all. We don't consider off-field stuff or what have you.
Fine.
And yet, like, that doesn't mean that you have to. Do the bylaws state that? Maybe the bylaws do state that you have to fly it at half staff when a member dies.
Okay.
Like, bylaws are changeable. I don't think these things are written. Are they written on a stone tablet or something?
I don't know.
Pro Football Hall of Fame?
I thought it was weird that the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the Heisman Trust, they don't get off that easy either. Both were like, we mourn the passing of OJ. I'm like, what?
Really? Let's be honest. You're kind of glad, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, we don't have to deal with this crap anymore. Unless we do something on our own to bring even more attention back.
Yeah.
It was a moment where both those organizations should have said, huh, you know, phew, thank God we don't have to deal with this anymore. No, instead they're like, let's invite more into the party. The Pro Football Hall of Fame acts like there's some elite military unit or something.
Yep.
They're like, well, you know, no matter what might have happened, he's one of ours. We don't leave any bodies behind. We're going to bring him with us. Like, what? No,
staff.
You're the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Loosely affiliated with the NFL.
I couldn't believe that. The flag flying at half staff for any football player, but like for O.J. Simpson, like you're equating it to soldiers and things like that. Like, oh, my God. By the way, I got my tickets for Andre Johnson's enshrinement. On Saturday.
Talking about something I'm already half-staff for.
In the
stadium.
Only half-staff? Okay.
Well, it's early. It's got to get it.
That's
it's going to go to a build.
Yeah. All right, let's get to eight.
Seth hunched over, shaking Andre's hand in Canton.
A man was accused in Memorial this weekend of impersonating a cop. How did he get caught? Because in his white Hyundai Santa Fe, with emergency lights on it, he pulled over another car in the Memorial area. It just so happens the car that he stopped had undercover deputies in the car.
This dude,
what are the
odds? Is a serial cop impersonator.
He is.
This is the fourth time he's been caught doing it.
Yes.
And honestly, it's a little bit terrifying because if you look at this picture, the dude's wearing a turtleneck. He looks as much like a movie villain as anybody I've ever seen.
And he's got like a vest and he's all armed and everything, you know?
Yeah. He was wearing but in the mugshot, he's just got the turtleneck on still.
Yeah.
But it was like, he was wearing like tactical gear as he's walking up.
Tactical.
And you wonder I don't know what he's like. It's terrifying. Because if I saw this guy, I would think that A, he's a cop, but B, he's an evil movie cop.
Yes.
Like, I feel like he was...
Well, and you mentioned it, and he's been caught four times. Like, four times in three different states. God only knows how many people he got with this gimmick somewhere along the way. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, no kidding. It's scary.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he does. If it's obviously, if you're a woman, the terrifying part is a potential sexual assault or something. But the other side is just, I mean, he's pulling over cops. I don't know if it says the cops were all males or not. But maybe he's just trying to extort, you know, get bribes out of him or something. Hey, I can make this go away.
Yeah.
It probably, to me, it seems, Sean, like one of these crimes that... just much like armed robbery, is like, what the bang for the buck that you're getting off of this is not worth it, man. Why don't you go back to school and become a white collar criminal? This is awful. Except that this guy looks so much like he looks like a movie villain.
Yeah,
like he pulled them over and it was like, you were going 65 in a 50. You'll die with the rebellion.
Exactly.
He's the most evil looking person I've ever seen.
Yep. Yep.
God, if he ever pulls me over, I'm going to beat the crap out of him.
Oh, I hope it happens. Yeah, well, if history holds true, he'll be doing it again at some point. Probably not in Texas, because he seems to bounce from state to state a little bit.
What's this guy's name? He looks like a Russian villain, but his name's Sean Arnold.
Okay, Sean Arnold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does not look like a Sean Arnold, I will say that. Spell Sean the wrong way. That's the first sign right there. All right, that was our 8 at 8, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday.
Real quick, Sean. Yeah. He had a taser, police radios, other police-related equipment, and a BB gun.
Yeah. What could go wrong?
The BB gun is the terrifying part,
What could go wrong?
He's walking up, pumping his air gun as he comes up to the cop.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, we got a dirty cop.
Yeah.
He pumped that air gun way more than he should have.
That's right.
This is a...
Spencer Arrighetti was all right last night. We'll see what Hunter Brown and J.P. France look like the next two nights. It's a good thing that it appears like Justin Verlander is on his way back. We got the update from Joe Espada and from Verlander himself coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Nice to be with you.
We were just reminiscing about the David Culley era. When every time one of my old pictures popped up on my just whatever Apple does to try to get you to look at your pictures, but it was David Culley. It was a little video I had of him whenever he would receive a Deshaun Watson question, he would like act like he didn't hear it and ask for them to repeat it. So in his mind, he was trying to answer it, and then immediately after he answered it, he would spin to the other side of the podium. Like if a question about Deshaun Watson had come from his left, he would hurry up to finish it, and then he would turn to his right and point like at everybody.
Yeah.
Like as if there was a question over there that he hadn't heard. Like, right. You're up. What? Yeah.
The best would be when nobody on that side had a question.
Maybe. Right. Like, no, that was the thing. Like nobody had asked a question. Yeah, he would just turn and like act like he was choosing whoever is asking the question.
Why are you looking at me, Culley? What are you looking at? What are you looking at?
Poor Culley. I would say poor Culley, but he knew what he was stepping into.
He ain't poor. Well, I tell you one thing. He ain't poor.
No, he ain't poor. They paid him quite well.
Yeah.
And as much as Stephen A. Smith will take up for David Culley without ever recommending him for another job, yeah, he was paid really well. And B, he didn't know exactly what he was stepping into. He knew he was stepping into a weird situation, but he didn't know about the allegations at that point.
Yep, true. Here's Justin Verlander. Well, actually, we'll get to Verlander in a second. Here was Joe Espada. This is pregame yesterday being asked what the situation is now. Verlander's made two rehab starts. When should we expect him back?
So he's going to throw his side tomorrow, and if that goes well, he'll pitch this weekend in Washington.
Based on what you heard from him and others, what are you thinking about?
He's in a good spot. He's in a good spot. He feels good. He's feel confident. He wants to contribute. He knows that we need him to. We need him on the mound. We need his presence. And right now, he's right where he needs to be.
Okay. So that was good. That's good news. Here's Verlander himself on getting back to pitching in the bigs soon.
The first thing is health and came out of feeling good. Obviously, I have some stuff to work on pitching-wise, but that's kind of what spring training is for and rehab starts are for. So, you know, felt better last time than I did the time before. And, you know, so just kind of keep building on that. And like I always do, kind of work on stuff in the bullpen in between and, you know, keep trying to make it click.
Is it your expectation to start Friday in Washington?
My expectation?
Yeah.
Well, it's a tricky way to pose it. That's a Joe question.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ultimate decision is on those guys if they feel I'm ready. You know, I think pitch count wise, I think it's pretty close, and health wise, I bounced back all the ways I would like to have seen. Like we had talked about earlier, kind of at length, some of the things that have been difficult for me to do are becoming easier and easier. So I feel like I've kind of checked all the boxes that need to be checked, and I do feel like I'm ready to step on the mound again, whether that's for us or somebody else. So that's again their decision.
I'm not that worried. I'm really not worried about the numbers in the minor leagues, as you heard Verlander say right there, Seth. Like, he's treating it like spring. He used the word spring training. Like, he's...
What was that at the very end? Whether it's for us or somebody else? Did he mean whether it's in the minors?
Yeah.
All right.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It was jarring when I heard it too, but then I thought about it. I'm like, there's no way he's referring to like them
there's
trading
no way he's
him or something.
Hinting
no.
at a potential trade.
No,
okay.
Zero chance, I think. I heard what you did too.
I think it, to me, as I listen to that, as he, put it on Espada, and not his own expectations, as he continued to talk, it felt more and more like he's feeling like he could go on Friday.
Yeah.
But didn't want to obviously speak out of turn.
Or speak for Espada because it's not Verlander's decision. As Espada said, he's going to throw, Verlander is going to throw on the side today. The cut, he said tomorrow. Tomorrow is Tuesday. Cuts from yesterday. So he's going to throw on the side today if he feels good. Friday in Washington, we get our first taste of 2024 Justin Verlander.
Yeah, and we might take a break from Spencer Arrighetti for a little while, which at this point, yeah, I guess if you had to power rank how I feel about him versus Hunter Brown or JP France, I don't know. I don't know how I would necessarily make the decision, other than that there's a part of me that just wants to see more Spencer Arrighetti and find out what he has in him. But that might have to wait.
Between Brown and France, they've had one good start this season between the two of them. Total. Hunter Brown hasn't been good in any of his starts. I was at his first start. He didn't give up a ton of runs like he did the next two. But he lasted four innings. Like, he's, his pitch count, he was in the 90s by the fourth inning. That's not a good outing. Spencer Arrighetti in his second start against the Braves, I'm willing to give a little bit of latitude to,
Of the Josh Hader thing, of all the pitching situations we have right now, the Josh Hader situation might be the most annoying, just because that was at least, the argument was, well, you should have addressed the middle relievers instead of the closer. Like, that was one argument to have, but that was when you were assuming that at the very least you were bringing in a really good closer.
Mm-hmm.
It would be pretty damn alarming and nearly unprecedented if Josh Hader, like, at this age, all of a sudden was just a bad closer. So I'm not overly concerned about this, but like for the moment, how I feel right now, it's the thing that's annoying me the most.
That
you can't even rely on Josh Hader right now. I could live with all the other issues. We knew about the starting pitcher injuries. We knew about the potential deficit with your middle relievers.
Yeah.
But the Josh Hader thing was supposed to be you overspent for this guy when you should have spent here. Now it's like, no. You just shouldn't have spent for him at all, based on current results.
If this is who Abreu is going to be, and most of the evidence indicates that is the case, and if Josh Hader is not what they thought he was going to be, I don't think he's going to have a 9 ERA all year like he has right now, but if he's not, he's one of the highest paid closers in the game. If he ain't, and he signed for 5 years, if he ain't a hammer, that's a failure. You know who's going to get a big taste of something is, it's not my money guy. The guy, like, when most people sit there and go, man, now you're over the luxury tax. You're spending $19 million on Hader, spending $19 million on Abreu. I love seeing Jim Crane be this aggressive, but boy, are you doing that at the expense of doing other things. It's not my money guy tends to come out a lot. Hey, why are you guys worried about him spending all this money? It's not my money. It's not our money. Yes, but there's a competitive balance tax. And by about the time July and August roll around, if this is a team that still has as many holes as it has 18 games into the season, you are going to be clamoring for them to fix those holes. And they're not going to be able to do it with anything even remotely resembling marquee-type names, because Jim Crane has spent his money on Jose Abreu, $19 million, and Josh Hader, if he's underperforming, $19 million. And Lance McCullers is getting paid $17 million to rehab his elbow.
Mm.
And and so on and so forth. Those are the big ones. Montero, I would mix in, but Montero's actually been decent this year so far. Not $11 million. There's nothing Montero can do pitching the sixth inning every 3 days that can make him worth $11 million, but at least he's not the, at least he's not the, you know, the pitching machine that he was last year, humping it up there and guys just launching against him. So I, yeah, the hater thing is annoying. The Abreu thing has just turned into just like a back pain that I walk around with all day and I don't really notice it anymore, you know, until he lets a ball skip by him at first base.
The thing with Hader that's not so unprecedented is just that, you know, he wasn't all that great in 2022. Yeah, he had a 3.51 ERA, which is well above every other year he's had in Major League Baseball until this year, where he currently has a 4.49. But I mean, if he ends up with a 3.51 ERA, well, that was expected ERA. His ERA was 5.22. So he ended up with a 5.22 ERA.
Wait, which I'm confused. Which year was he 5.22?
2022.
Okay.
So it was his actual ERA was 5.22, but his expected ERA was 3.51.
Okay. Well, there you go. He's 9.39 right now. I don't think there's any expected or actual that's going to make Josh Hader look any better to me right now. Hey, Joey Loperfido, speaking of Jose Abreu, won Player of the Week for the minor leagues yesterday. 11 for 26 with a 1636 OPS and 5 home runs last week. Joey Loperfido.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm right now, I'm old school baseball guy in that I don't need to rush Loperfido up to the majors. Like, he's striking out a boatload. Mm-hmm. So when he's making contact, he's making really good contact. But I don't feel like pitch identification is something that you want to work on at the major league level.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to, you know, be Alex Bregman by the time he comes up in terms of his pitch selection. But I do feel like he needs to hammer this thing out a little bit for a guy that is very much like, he's been on a crazy trajectory for how much improvement he's made over the last few years.
Yeah, you got to see it's real.
I would say pump the brakes a little bit until he brings that strikeout rate down.
I agree with you. This is a new sensation for us. Like, actually following closely day to day an everyday minor league player, like, this is the first time that I can remember, like, actually, like, looking to see how a guy did at AAA or AA since Jordan back in 2019.
Oh, okay, yeah, since Jordan. I was going to say back to, like, do you not remember George Springer?
I mean new as in the last couple of years. Yeah,
some of the guys when you're kind of eagerly awaiting the replacement from the minors.
Yeah.
When you're wondering, like, when it was that, instead of the old problem, which was, oh, what are we going to do with all these minor leaguers?
Right.
Oh, boy. Oh, but we're bursting at the seams, and all of these guys are ready to come up.
Yeah.
With Loperfido, you know what it brings me back to? This is where I always have PTSD about forever with the Astros. They had all these quadruple A-type players.
Mm-hmm.
John Singleton was one of them.
Yeah.
Where they'd be incredible in the minors, and then they'd come up, and they'd be a whiff party in the majors. Then they'd go back down, and they'd be incredible in the minors. And they were so. And the theory was that the Astros minor league system just did such a good job of maximizing these guys' talents that they could destroy AAA, but they didn't have it in the majors. Like, that's what I fear with Loperfido. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves before he's genuinely ready to come up.
I think Jake Myers is a little bit like that.
I think Jake Myers
is a current example of that. Yeah, so I'm with you on not rushing Loperfido, but I'm following it closely, and that's the feeling I got yesterday when I got the email from the Space Cowboys that he had won Player of the Week in the minor leagues, and I'm looking at the numbers, and I'm like, I remember watching all of these home runs on Twitter over the weekend, you know, five of them. I watched all five of them. This is what it felt like with, and I'm not saying Loperfido's Yordan, but that's what it felt like with Yordan Alvarez back in 2019 when he was destroying AAA. It was like, all right, when are we going to bring this guy up? And they were a good hitting team back then, too. But you still, Yordan is a different level of hitter, obviously.
Yeah, the whole thing, like, Yordan, Yordan's.
He's a savant.
Yeah, I understand you're not making that direct comparison just because he was a level of polish for a rookie that you rarely, rarely see.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud revealed something yesterday about his family that, I found pretty remarkable, actually.
Pretty remarkable, and I'm honestly, I'm a little bit. I feel I'm feeling for CJ in advance.
Yeah, same.
This is going to be tough. Right?
Same. Yeah, we'll let you know. We'll let you hear from CJ on that coming up next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast here with CJ Stroud, talking about his family. He's been spending a lot of time in L.A. this offseason, gotten to see his family way more this offseason than the last few years, because the NFL actually gives you a couple months off, unlike being a student at Ohio State University. Here was CJ Stroud. Take a listen to which family member he's been kicking it the most with lately.
Yeah, family, you know, I don't really... Everything is too much or too little, you know. I mean, it's kind of like how I grew up. I mean, I always have been with my family. I mean, they're my core family, you know. So I love my family. They've been there. They would be here even without football, you know. So I'm super blessed to have them and my mother, you know. They've been amazing. And, you know, my little dog Oreo has been kicking it with me the last couple of days. He's a toy poodle. He's 19 years old. So he's an old dog. And he's been kicking it with me. And hopefully he'll have another 19 years. But yeah, man, family's everything. You know, it's been amazing to spend more time with them. I told my mom, I mean, this is the most I've ever spent time with my family since really like high school. You know, going to college, being in Ohio, I never really had that much time. So it's been amazing.
19 years old, Oreo.
This is what I worry about with CJ, is that the, you know, the typical lifespan of a toy poodle is 10 to 18 years. If CJ got this toy poodle when he was 4 or 5 years old, then he might not realize or know that dogs don't live to be 38 years old.
Yeah.
You know, he was most likely just saying like, hey, hopefully in under 19 years, like, I hope CJ's prepared for, you know, the worst. It just, I don't want this to... I would hate for him to have to like be blindsided by this if something happens to little Oreo.
Can I just tell you, when I was actually watching this press conference yesterday while I was exercising, and he got to that part of the press conference, and the machine I was on was making kind of noise, so there were certain things like I couldn't quite hear and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And when he got to the part, I didn't hear that the whatever entity he was talking about that was 19 years old was a dog.
Oh, and you hope that you thought he was talking about a person.
Yeah, and he goes, I hope he gets another 19. I'm like, what? Boy,
he's singing that awful jovially.
Man, I hope he gets another 19. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, man, this is either somebody who is suffering from something really bad where another 19 years would be a gift, or is someone who lives a pretty reckless lifestyle.
Yeah, lives a reckless life, and why is CJ hanging out with him?
Exactly.
Turns out it's Oreo, the toy poodle. I think we're okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Nothing more gangster than that.
Right.
Yeah, not
that I want to revel in the low expected or life expectancy of dogs. I don't, but I was glad to hear it wasn't a person.
I got a 19-year-old toy poodle, and I'm guessing that I don't... Does he travel? I don't... Is he...
Made it to Houston.
Is he in Houston? Well, he was in L.A., though. He might have been hanging out with him out in California before he came back.
Probably.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a mystery.
I feel now people are going to be afraid to inquire after Oreo on this. You ask... Yeah. It's kind of like these days. I don't bother asking anybody, like, how's your wife? If I haven't seen somebody in 5 or 6 years at our age,
dude,
I don't ask, hey, how's the wife? I'll wait for them to either tell me about whatever happened or if everything's great or whatever.
I've gotten not just marriage, but like jobs or kids or anything.
Yeah.
Like I am a very like feel it out kind of person, you know, just to get or check Facebook. Like, okay, let's see. Oh, they were at this event like 2 weeks ago. I guess it's safe. I guess it's safe to dip my toe in the how's so-and-so doing water? You know what I mean?
I did. You know the last time I did that, Sean? I was at a football game, and I ran into one of my cousins that I don't see much anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his father is my great uncle. And I said, yeah, so how's your dad doing anyway? Oh, yeah, he died 9 months ago. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that on Facebook now that you mention it.
Yeah, what's the follow-up to that? How did you pull that one out of a nose?
I said no bleep. I was like, no bleep.
Yeah, that's good. Good job. That's a good job, Seth.
And I said, I don't know, he loved the good life or something. Yep. And then I slapped him on the shoulder and I sent him on his way.
Yep. We say all this to say, pray for Oreo, all right? Pray for Oreo. C.J. Stroud, he's got a lot of teammates that are going to be in the draft this year, former Ohio State teammates, that is, including Marvin Harrison Jr. Why should Marvin Harrison Jr. be the number one wide receiver taken in this draft?
Why should it be Marv? Put on the tape. he's done it from really his freshman year, his true freshman year, to now. When you talk about, I read something like he's NFL ready, but other guys have more potential. That makes no sense. Like, what? Like, if you're NFL ready, how is that not potential? You know, like, you want longevity. You want somebody who's been doing it, you know, and for him, that's what he sleeps, eats, and he breathes. You know, he's a worldly talent, but also his work ethic and, you know, how he gravitates like that room. I challenged him that last year when Jackson went down, he had to take over as leader, and he did that, you know. He's not really vocal, but he became vocal, and you can see his personality start to come out as he started to play more. And, you know, for me, I mean, I think I would love to play with him again. I know I probably won't get that opportunity for a while, but, you know, I'm super, super proud of him. And, man, who's up there, man, be smart. Don't be dumb. Don't think too hard.
Don't think too hard. Yeah, I'm sure they won't. I'm sure they haven't been thinking too hard for 3 months since they started, right? I hear too many times like scouts or former scouts say, like, yeah, most of the time you realize, well, my first impression was correct. And then they leave out the part where, like, but to justify my salary.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
We have to think and meet about this
forever.
I got to
fill these 16 hours each day. Yeah.
I think that you mentioned earlier that, you know, you're surprised sometimes by athletes and how they think so much differently about it than fans or sports media in a lot of ways. And I think when it comes to the draft, especially there, like for CJ, the notion that somebody would be pro ready but not have the upside of some of these other guys, it's kind of like a foreign concept to him. He'd never heard something so stupid.
Yeah.
I would share that. Like, it's when you're a player and you're not really watching and consuming this stuff, like the whole concept of a high ceiling, low floor, high ceiling, high floor, low ceiling, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's not something that's in your world.
No.
You know, like you just don't think about it that way. If somebody were to say to Marvin, CJ, they think Marvin Harrison is a high floor, but perhaps a lower ceiling than some of these guys, he's going to think it's the dumbest thing in the world.
Yeah, when he said that at the very end, like he said, you know, don't think too hard. And I heard that cut. I'm going, CJ, go read some scouting report. Boy, the things they say about your fluid hips as you're throwing, the things they say about your hand size, you know, the things they say, like, the little catchphrases that they have for stuff, your mind would be blown by how much this stuff is overthought.
You know, blown. What also, though, what the word did he use? It sounded like worldly. Did he mean like world league?
I didn't. In that cut right there, I don't
know. Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like when Trump, this is one of the many things he shares in common with Donald Trump, I think, as people are always pointing out. It was like, it sounded like, like when Trump will say big league, but it sounds like bigly, like that.
Oh, yeah.
Ben, run that back and find out which part I'm talking about in there.
Play it again, Ben. Play it again. Yeah. Jukebox time.
Why should it be Marv? Put on the tape. he's done it from really his freshman year, his true freshman year, to now. When you talk about, I read something like he's NFL ready, but other guys have more potential. That makes no sense. Like, what? Like, if you're NFL ready, how is that not potential? You know, like, you want longevity. You want somebody who's been doing it, you know. And for him, that's what he sleeps, eats, and he breathes. You know, he's a worldly talent, but also he just...
Here you go. Worldly talent?
I'd say worldly. I think he means like all world, like, you know, like...
He's, okay, all yeah, world like talent.
A, yeah,
world,
that's okay. That's what I read.
I think he's a world league talent. I think he's no better than playing for the Rhine Fire, is what I'm telling you. I think there's the Scottish Claymores, and that's nothing and nothing more than that, okay? The London... Who were the London? The meat broilers or
I
something?
Forget.
Meat
Yeah. It's something. Yeah, but even worldly, like worldly means like he's well traveled. Anyways, I think I know.
Worldly can be an insult in religious circles.
Can it really?
Yeah. Okay. You don't want to be worldly. You don't want to be too worldly.
Okay.
Stay away from the world. Just stay in your nice little cloister there and feed what we feed you. You know, read what we sell you.
Yeah. Oh, I see. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We head into the 9 o'clock hour. I would say the Texans have had a really good offseason. They've gotten a lot of compliments on some of the things they've done at certain positions. There is one position in particular they're not getting a lot of praise for, and D'Amico Ryans answered what they look for there. Does what they have match what they look for? We will discuss next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.